This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and this is the place you want to be here at KYKN for local talk, where we handle issues not on the national stage, not on the statewide stage, very much, but a local community talk, having to do with individuals, institutions, ideas, and initiatives here in the Mid-Valley in Marion and Polk County. And there's a huge one, folks. It's been going on how the last few years. We haven't talked about it much, but I brought in a guest here to the studios. This is one of those things, Dave, that affects our economy. It affects our workforce. It affects our our economic development of the region and, of course, the utilization of our natural resources. And, of course, when you do that, you intersect with politics.
Oh, always.
So many things, and it's fascinating, and really fascinating in terms of where this industry is going. And I'm talking about Ferreris Lumber Company. And if you're not familiar, Ferreris has launched all new technology and capabilities in cross-laminated plywood. And we'll try to stick away from too many acronyms and get down to the nitty-gritty as far as what this means for what they can do and what they can bring and bringing new dollars to the region and new jobs and, new technologies to construction. First, let's get to know Kyle. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Brent. I'm happy to be here.
So Kyle Ferreris is a vice president of operations at Ferreris Lumber Company. You guys have been in business a minute or two.
A minute or two. Actually, close to 100 years.
In fact, 100 years.
Yeah, my grandfather started the business in 1922. So in a few more years, we'll be there at 100.
Wow. 1922. And when your grandfather, when he did the lumber company, was he cutting down trees and milling? What was the job back then?
He was. But back then, they typically moved the mills to the trees because it was easier to do that than to move the logs to the mill. So when he started, he had a small steam-powered sawmill up in the North Fork of the San Yam.
That is awesome. Do you guys have your own museum? You should have a historical museum.
Yeah. We probably should. There's actually a small museum up in Mill City that has some great memorabilia.
Okay, Mill City, is that the home territory for you guys?
It's close. Main office and our main location is actually in Lyons, which is just a few miles away from Mill City. But we also have a plywood plant that we operate in Mill City.
So Ferreris Lumber, so you've been in business 1922, went from your grandfather to your dad and your uncle, and now you and your brother are heavily involved in the industry. My first question is, boy, can you still make a living with lumber?
Well,
is it limited? But you have to use private timberland, or where do you go for that?
Well, I won't lie. We're in a tough business in a lot of ways. We're in a commodity business, or we have been in the past. Back in the late 50s, we actually switched from primarily being a lumber producer into being a veneer producer for the plywood market that was developing in the mid 1900s. We were a lot more successful at making veneer than lumber. So yeah. I guess to your point, we weren't all that successful making lumber, so we had to switch. Then in 1998, we purchased a plywood plant and basically vertically integrated and started making product that customers would actually see on the store shelves. But that wasn't until 1998.
All right. So for people who know nothing, we got a few listening have no idea about lumber. What's the veneer is the top layer of a sheet of plywood. Right?
Well, it's actually every layer in a sheet of plywood. So if you get a half-inch sheet of plywood, you'll typically have either 4 or 5 plies of veneer. And you have different grades that make up that plywood, but it's veneer all the way through, essentially.
So prior to that, then you would make that veneer and somebody else would produce the plywood, right?
Exactly. That or an engineered wood product like a laminated veneer lumber or an engineered wood eye joist or something like that. Those were big customers of ours.
Did you deal with oriented strand board? Is that completely different? Beast.
That's a completely different animal. It's actually a big competitor to plywood, particularly because it's a lot cheaper. So contractors like to use it, and even though we feel like plywood is a better product, a lot of people really don't know or care what's beneath their siding. The other thing about OSB is that the OSB is really coming in from Canada for the most part in this area, and they just built a couple plants down in the south. But historically, it's been a Canadian product.
You know, I got to tell you, Dave, if I'm going to build a floor I'm going to want plywood on the bottom.
Yeah.
Right? And people put it on the side of houses, but really, if it gets compromised at all, I mean, it's a great product because it does its job and it's affordable, relatively affordable. But if you had your choice, you know, you want your floor made of plywood, it, it's just more solid.
Well,
right?
When you're building a house, you want to not go cheap either.
Yeah.
So, you want the best products.
All right. So you've got these veneers and they are laminated together, right?
Correct.
And you get this hard, you know, if you guys go to the store, folks, if you're doing it yourself, so you got a 4x8 sheet, typically, of this plywood, and you can make rooftops out of it, and you can make floors out of it, and you can make walls heads. So you guys vertically integrated by buying the manufacturer of the plywood.
Correct.
All right. So how long ago was that?
Oh, that's about 20 years now, actually. A little over 20 years.
Wow. So when you were a grade school kid.
That's it. Not quite. Just getting out of college, actually.
All right. So my next question, how is it to find labor these days to do the work to keep the operations going? Is that a struggle for you guys?
Well, it is a struggle. I mean, we're we aren't in a major urban area out in Lyons. We have a small population there, and frankly, commutes matter. So we recruit from the local area as much as we can, but frankly, we also reach out to the Salem-Keizer area for employees.
Yeah, I mean, Mill City's growing, and hopefully that'll help. And
absolutely,
the existence, frankly, the existence of your jobs that you're offering in the canyon is going to be a part of that. Right?
That's right.
All right, we're going to talk about cross-laminated plywood. It's fascinating, folks, what they can do and what the technologies are. It's going to be amazing. But I want to get through some of this so people understand this. It's still a family-owned company.
It is.
Almost 100 years old. It's a family-owned company, and you made a huge investments out there, betting that you guys could make this work, and the labor is going to be have to be a component of that. You're going to have skilled labor. Moving into your next this next product line, does it require a big jump in employees, or is this something that's really automated by a lot of machinery, so you just need a few specialized employees?
I would say that it's a highly automated process, especially since we're dealing with products that we've made out of our ply plant as well, and creating a higher value, larger format product with those. I will say the positions we have in that facility are typically a lot more specialized than our other facilities as well.
So you're not talking about somebody who just knows how to use one piece of equipment or a saw or anything, right?
That's right.
I imagine the learning curve is pretty steep.
It can be, and particularly with equipment like the CNC machines that we're using in our operations, it's very very specialized.
Why? Why did Freris Lumber decide, hey, we're going to go into a whole new market and make a huge investment, and we're also going to do it right here where we sit? What made that sense for you guys?
Well, part of it was the discussion we had earlier about OSB. OSB is a competitor for plywood. It's a very it's a lot cheaper traditionally than plywood, and sometimes even half the cost. And frankly, we were tired of bottom feeding in commodity markets against an inferior but product that was taking our market share. So we were actively looking for a way to develop a higher value product that utilized the characteristics of the plywood, which we knew was superior.
Yeah, we're talking to Kyle Freris of Freris Lumber, and I liked how he just threw some shade there. And just it's just a matter of fact, you know, we're bottom feeding against an inferior product, and we want to elevate our game, right? It was awesome. Or OSB, folks, if you're not familiar, if you're not a lumber person, that's oriented strand board, and you see them in the home improvement stores, and they'll sell them in sheets like plywood, but it's not the same product at all.
That's
so
right.
It looks like you've taken a bunch of shavings from somebody's whittling. Right, and then poured a bunch of glue on it and pressed it. That's what it looks like, right?
Absolutely. Okay.
That is how they make it, right? Right.
Well, it is, and you know the beauty of plywood is that in peeling the veneer, you have grain direction that runs in one direction typically, because a tree wants to be strong, growing tall. The beauty of plywood is they can lay up that grain direction in a way that makes it strong in every direction. And you can also tailor the strength characteristics based on the engineering properties of the veneer. So it's a very strong product. It's one that has a lot of flexibility in a lot of different applications. And oriented strand board just isn't the same way. But at the same time, it was getting market share, particularly in residential applications, over products like ours.
It must have been tough enough during the recession when nobody was building anything to find a market for plywood. Much less, you know, in the oriented strand board as well, competing against them, right?
That's true.
How'd you guys survive?
Well, it was tough. I got to say, at the end of 2008, after the whole Lehman Brothers issue, I remember sitting in and watching some news programs and thinking, wow, this is serious stuff. And then walking through our warehouse and seeing a wall of wood and wondering when we would have a chance to sell that wall of wood. So it was difficult. But I think a few things carried us through. One is that we're very conservative. We don't have any debt. So we were able to weather a lot of these storms that a lot of companies struggle with. We had and still have, I think, a good management team that didn't make any rash decisions, and we have dedicated employees that help carry us through.
Wow. I love it. We're talking to Kyle Freres of Freres Lumber. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about, hey, folks, we're going to talk about cross-laminated plywood, but you're going to be surprised. You're really going to be surprised at what they can do and what they're doing with it. So stick with us. We'll be right back on Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Warren on 1430 KYKN Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. In our studios is Kyle Freres of Freres Lumber Company, and I hope I teased your curiosity enough. I kept saying cross-laminated timber, but Kyle has corrected me during the break, and their product is mass plywood panels. And what do you see how massive it is, actually? And mass timber is better terminology, right?
That kind of covers the entire market segment. Because there's a lot of products that go into mass timber.
All right up here in the canyon, you guys are creating this. Describe it for us.
Well, essentially what we're creating is a large format panel, and that panel can be up to 12 feet wide and 48 feet long, and we can lay it up and cut it up to 12 inches thick. What that gives you is essentially a platform that you can use for essentially commercial construction.
And wow.
Its particular application is as a substitute for concrete and steel in mid to high rise buildings.
Wow. So 12 feet wide. Well, that's pretty good. 48 feet long. How can you move it?
Well, all these panels are really designed to be moved with heavy equipment.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is that you can speed up the construction process. Since you aren't, say, forming concrete walls, putting all the labor into forming those walls and then tearing them down, waiting for the concrete to cure, things like that, you can essentially pre-CNC, so pre-manufacture these panels so that when they arrive on the job site, you drop them in place and put connectors on them, and then that's it.
Tell me what CNC is.
CNC is computer numerical cutting, essentially. But it basically means you can drop in a program from a CAD file and cut a panel with connections and dimensions and that match what they anticipate on the job site.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I'll say it for you, Brent. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. It's actually the largest CNC machine in the world. It's a 14-foot bridge that's cutting these panels. Wow. That came from Germany. It's a pretty impressive piece of equipment.
Dang.
So your engineer and in conjunction with the architect designed this thing, where the windows are going to be and where, you know, other architectural features are going to be, and draw it out for you in a computerized, and you stick that in your system and your machine cuts it.
Exactly.
Wow. So you need a wall. You might do an entire wall out of one piece. Does that sound right?
We could. And really, the areas that we tend to focus on in high-rise construction are elevator shafts, because those are difficult to construct a lot of times, beams and columns, and floors and roofs. Walls are tough because you have to get a lot of electrical and mechanical and plumbing through them, and you have to worry about insulation and things like that. But the base structure, the structural elements of the building, are really what products like ours are designed to provide.
Yeah. Okay. Beams, floors, roofs, elevator shafts.
That's right.
Interesting.
Never thought of that.
12 inches thick. Can you picture that, folks? Have you ever seen a sheet of plywood and it's like a half inch thick at Home Depot and Lowe's?
Yeah.
You might have made 12 inches thick and the strength that comes with that. Tell us a little bit about the technology and why it's so strong.
Well, it's really, it's strong due to the nature of the veneers that we put into it. Like I mentioned before, you have a lot of flexibility when you're dealing with 1/8 inch thick pieces of veneer. You can orient those in a lot of different ways to meet certain structural specifications. And so in every inch, we have 9 layers, essentially, of veneer. And so you think about a 12-inch panel, we have 108 layers of flexibility built in that panel to design it how an architect and an engineer would like to see it.
What else goes into the product besides the wood product?
We have adhesives. The primary adhesive is a phenylformaldehyde resin in the plywood. And we also use a melamine-based adhesive for our cold set resins as well.
Melamine-based. Uh-huh. Really? So where does that product originate?
Springfield,
Oregon.
That's right.
Oh, you're going to love it. This is incredible.
Local.
About using our resources here in the state to create economic development. I wish the legislature would pay attention to what creates economic development. Was that politically? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Just tosses those out. You know.
So, yeah. Our industry is really, you know, it's interrelated to quite a few industries. So the adhesive companies out there, like the Hexions and the GPs of the world, they're local and they supply a lot of local mills. A lot of the residuals from our primary production go to nurseries or farms for animal bedding or plant bedding. There's the residual products from our primary production go 1,000 different directions.
Wow. That's a lesson for some people. I wish you could get every legislator out to the facility and understand.
Yeah, give them a tour.
How many different industries are touched by one?
Right.
Right? And yeah. If one is healthy or more healthy than it has been, what that would do for so many other industries in Oregon, right?
Yep, that's right.
All right. I'll try to leave some of the political talk to me so I don't want you to get in too much trouble. We're talking to Kyle Ferris of Ferris Lumber Company. All right, 48 feet long. Sometimes I just want to put these things in perspective. That means if it is an elevator shaft, for instance, you could put it in a 4-story building.
That's right.
One piece.
That's right.
See? Okay, now I'm really impressed.
4-story building.
4.
That's incredible.
That's right. And CNC it in such a way that you drop it in place and secure it together, and that's it.
Wow. All right. So can we go back in time a little bit? Because you didn't just make it up. How did you decide, hey, you know, this is going to be a wave of the future, and we're going to throw a lot of marbles into it?
Well, essentially what happened is we were sitting in our offices in 2015, struggling against the fact that we're losing market share against OSB and some other products. And we actually started brainstorming about different ways that we can develop a higher value product. We'd heard a lot about cross-laminated timber, which had been used in Europe for about 20 years, and it's essentially a large format panel made out of lumber products. And we couldn't understand how they could justify using as much wood as they did in the panels, and because we had light wood framing and residential construction in our mind. So we went to Europe and visited a couple of facilities, and that's when the light bulb kind of went off that this wasn't for our traditional construction. This was for industrial and commercial construction. It was to replace concrete, and then you could absolutely see how you could justify putting the expense and the wood fiber into large format panels like this.
Now, will it last as long as concrete, though?
Absolutely. If you know they aren't designed to use in exterior applications, so you want to protect wood products like this in construction with some sort of weatherproof membrane or siding product or something like that. But there's wood structures that are 300 years old around the world that have lasted well enough.
Yeah.
Well, like Notre Dame, maybe.
Maybe.
Had a
That's
bit
a
of
bad example. Now. I mean, considering the fire that happened this last year. But
yeah, but it's also been there hundreds and hundreds of
That's
years.
True.
Of
That's
years.
Very true.
It's made out of wood and timber. That is fascinating.
Well, on the fire side, I mean, since that came up, products like ours have actually proven to be very safe in fires, where people have been concerned in the past about repeats of, say, the San Francisco fire due to the earthquake back in the early 1900s. Mass timber products, just due to their sheer mass and size, they char, but even though they char, they perform very well structurally in fires.
Wow, and slowing it down. A lot of times they'll use plywood as a fire break, right? I'm trying to think of my vocabulary here. It's not a deterrent, but it slows down the spread of the fire by having a barrier there.
That's right.
Okay, so the resins and chemistry that's in it doesn't just ignite and conflagrate.
Add to it.
No, it doesn't.
If anything, it would stop it, right? Almost.
Well, it helps. I mean, fire is pretty destructive, but what happens is that we perform very predictably. We can predict how we're going to perform in a fire, and we can account for that in the design of the building.
So you bought this massive CNC production machinery asset. What kind of investment is that?
Well, the initial investment in the facility was about $35 million.
Wow.
So it was a big leap of faith for our company, for sure.
$35 million. Wow. And who delivers it, installs it, and teaches you how to use it? Is that you said it was a German manufacturer?
Well, there's German equipment that's involved in the process, and we essentially went to an equipment integrator named Stiles, and they have relationships with a lot of different equipment manufacturers around the world. And we went to them and we said, this is our idea. We know you guys have experience in putting up CLT facilities. We need a little bit of that technology, and we need a little bit of our own magic, you know. And so we worked with them on the design of the facility, and they delivered. Some of it was produced in North Carolina, and some of it was produced in Germany.
Okay, so who else in Oregon is doing what you do?
Well, frankly, nobody is doing exactly what we do. We have a patent for our product in 5 different countries now. So it's a pretty unique product. Now, I will say that there are local producers of cross-laminated timber. D.R. Johnson down in Riddle, for instance, has a CLT facility.
And how big? I'm trying to get an idea of how cutting edge it is. So you have a patent on what exactly you are doing. So on the West Coast in America, do you have a lot of competition for what you're doing?
Well, up until about a year or two ago, there was about 3 or 4 North American producers, a couple out of Canada and a couple here in the States, and that's about it. There has been an investment from some European firms. Now I think there's probably 6 or 7 producers in North America doing a variety of different products or different takes on the same type of product anyway.
We're talking to Kyle Ferreris of Ferreris Lumber. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about what is the market for them. It's cool that they can make it and everything, but who's using it? What obstacles have they had politically, and what obstacles have they had with regulations and the engineering component of it? Ferreris Lumber investing in the Mid-Valley here. Some fascinating things. Stick with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin for 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I am thrilled to be talking with Kyle Ferreris here in the studio here on Newsmakers. He's a vice president of operations at Ferreris Lumber, third generation, founded almost 100 years ago, dealing with wood products, and now mass timber products. So mass plywood panels. They can make this sucker 48 feet long.
That's amazing.
They invest $35 million here in our region. And you know what? We can't take that for granted.
No.
And you know what else, folks? The land it sits on, they've been paying property tax.
Mm-hmm.
But in Marion County, you have to pay tax on your equipment as well.
A lot of
people don't realize that there's a personal property tax. So, one, it's an incredible investment at a time in which wood products are demonized a little bit in the public mind and in the pop culture. And we have economy issues and we have political issues. And you guys whip out a $35 million investment. I know. Personally, I just want to say thank you to the family.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, and realizing that most people do not realize that if your company owns typewriters and computers and a piece of equipment and maybe some trucks, they get taxed on the equipment that they use to do their jobs.
That's government for you.
Yeah, that is a personal property tax, and many counties do not have it. Many states do not have it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that small business does.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be working in a family-owned company that's been around this long?
Well, frankly, it adds a bit of gravity to the job.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we all are pretty recognize the the heritage that has been provided to us. I think about the last 100 years and all that my grandfather put into it, you know, through the Depression and everything else, to provide a company like this for everybody who came later. It's pretty impressive. It's a lot of gravity involved.
I bet that your company also helped pull out of the Depression, people out of the Depression, by giving them jobs to create the lumber to help build the homes that happened after that Depression, right?
Absolutely. There was a big focus during the Depression on timber harvest and some big civil projects like Timberline Lodge, for instance, and things like that. And the timber industry was a big part of that.
That's impressive. I like that.
So now you have this new toy. You have this new $35 million investment,
toy, yeah.
And you can do amazing things with it. How hard is it to find a use for it? Do you have to create your own market? Because isn't there a bit of an education curve that you have to show engineers how to certify it and show architects how to utilize it?
Well, the biggest hurdle we had to begin with was the certification that you mentioned. It took us a long time to get certified. We have a third-party certifier that runs your product through a gamut of tests to make sure that you're going to meet certain performance standards. And as opposed to CLT, cross-laminated timber, we're actually certified under two standards. One is an LVL standard, or a structural composite lumber standard, and the other is the PRG 320, which is the cross-laminated timber standard. So we went through twice the testing that a typical company like ours would have gone through in order to produce mass timber. So that was a big hurdle. In fact, we didn't receive our certification until August of 2018. Mm. So that was one of our first big hurdles to overcome.
Wow. So like the building that's going up now for the police facility, it's steel and it's concrete, yeah. Right? Would that be a type of structure you could potentially make out of your product?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Faster.
Faster, absolutely, because, like I mentioned, the cure time with concrete. But there's other aspects that come to the construction as well. The pre-manufactured part of it is huge, because if you transfer the labor to the factory that's producing the panels, you have a controlled environment in there with the equipment available to you to make it happen a lot quicker, as opposed to a job site where people are dealing with, you know, bad weather and city traffic and things like that. So we can just frankly produce the floor or roof sections a lot quicker than concrete can.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, to your point about education, that's been an important aspect as well. We've found that architects are very excited about having a new product out there that they can use for construction. So they haven't been very difficult to convince. Engineers are a little tougher because they want every single, certified engineering specification that we can provide them, whether that's fire or structural specifications, or even acoustics are a big issue, especially in multifamily construction. So they're a little hard to convince. And then finally it comes down to the contractors. And contractors are very familiar with building with concrete and steel. But this whole mass timber movement is a different animal to them. And they'll often add a considerable amount of additional, I'd say, costs in their estimates in order to protect themselves for a product that they aren't familiar with.
So if I'm going to use this in a structure, and I already know the dimensions, you're going to cut it at your factory. They're going to cut it at your plant, and they don't have to pay the labor, right, to put it in, to do all the cuts to fit it all in.
That's right.
So that's where this, and then now when skilled labor is so short of supply, if you can get something that's already pre-cut and engineered and you drop it in, it's quicker.
Yep.
Saves labor, which means you save time, which means you save money.
Yep. It's also lighter than concrete and steel. So you typically have fewer truckloads that are hitting the job site, and you have less waste on the job site, because by designing the entire building ahead of time, you can manufacture these panels to use the material a lot more efficiently. So you don't end up with a bunch of drop boxes on your job sites with a bunch of cutoff material.
Right. And that might go to the, solid waste facility where you guys if your waste is going to be reutilized.
That's exactly right.
Wow, this is amazing.
Well, in fact, the waste that we generate in our facilities, any wood products we can't use for a higher value, we have a cogeneration facility that's producing enough power for about 5,000 homes.
Wow.
Another way to look at that is we actually produce more power on an annual basis than all of our facilities use combined, and that's just off of residual wood products.
And you guys own that capacity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, and that takes place in the canyon.
Yes, it does.
All right.
You're the man.
Wow, up in Lyons, Mill City, that area. So engineering, architects, regulations. So the building codes and things like that, how quickly have they been to embrace and accept and approve structures with your product?
Well, Oregon has actually led the way when it comes to building codes with mass timber. There's been a couple buildings, hybrid-style buildings, constructed up in Portland, but they've actually created an alternative path in the building codes that allows for wood construction up to 12 stories unprotected and 18 stories protected. So Oregon and Washington are on the vanguard of this.
So in Oregon, you can do a 12-story building with no steel.
That's correct.
Wow. And what do you mean protected and unprotected?
Meaning for fire. So that's typically a layer of gypsum is all it takes to say you have a protected structure.
Wow. How incredible is that? 12 stories.
Well, and the big game changer here is that the IBC, which is the International Building Codes, in 2021 are expected to basically approve the same thing and allow for 12 stories and 18-story structures out of wood.
Wow. Do you feel like you're on the cusp, really, of the change the way people build? And really, you've thrown this huge investment and you're betting on the come, and you're just at the beginning of what might explode?
I think so. I mean, the comment that I've heard is that there's so many businesses out there that have seen huge leaps in productivity, you know, whether it's manufacturing facilities like ours or software companies, things like that, that the productivity advancements have just been incredible over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years. The same can't be said for construction. Mm-hmm. There haven't been enormous construction advances, and this could be an opportunity with some of the design capabilities with 3D design of buildings, modular construction or pre-manufactured construction. This could be the way that people actually decrease the cost of construction decrease the timeline of construction, too, that allows to build more structures for people, build more homes.
We're talking to Kyle Ferris. I have so many questions. We could probably be for a couple of hours. Primarily, your market right now is commercial construction, not homes, right?
That's correct.
So would it be in the future, you think?
I think there's
almost put all the pieces together for them just to lay the floor down already cut.
All right, so the floors are a great example. I think we can be competitive with floors in a residential setting. In fact, we've provided a floor for a Portland farmhouse, and we were able to lay down over 3,000 square feet in less than one day of floor, and that was with no floor joists. So we had essentially a 6-inch floor panel, solid wood, 6 inches thick, but no floor joists, just with intermediary supports every 16 feet. So I think there is potential on the floor systems for residential.
Wow, I hope you can visualize that. That's tough, but that is amazing. Okay, we're going to have to take another quick break. There's so many other things to talk about. We want to talk with Kyle Ferris here about some of the tax measures and the legislature and the political environment and its effect on even doing business in Oregon in wood products, right? So stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. In the studio with us today, Kyle Ferris, Vice President of Operations at Ferris Lumber, made a huge investment here in our region, folks. And that should not be taken lightly by any of us because, frankly, you could have done this in Idaho.
Well, that's right. And it was actually part of the decision. I have to admit it was part of the discussion about whether or not we should consider building here in Oregon or in a different state. And frankly, we can ship our plywood anywhere across the country, and we can make our mass plywood panels out of those base products. So this didn't have to sit here in the San Diego Canyon by any means.
So, but you did. And the legislature, they were overly friendly to business this last session, and it hurts wood products as well. And the quotes from the governor that I've been very critical of, honestly, when she's saying, well, you know, we can't rely on rural Oregon or non-metro Oregon to be our economic driver anymore. Those days have passed. I'm like, they've only passed because you've beaten them down and tried to destroy them. That's how I feel. So
political comment again.
Yeah, but agreed. It's true. And
it is true.
And the tax implications with the new tax measures and so forth. How do you guys weather that? And what representation do you have at the Capitol? And do you feel like you're fighting a losing battle?
Well, we've been politically active over the last 20 years, probably longer than that. But it always seems like whatever political contributions we make, it's been a poor ROI, let's put it that way. Especially in the last couple of years, what's been coming out of the legislature has been very difficult. It seems like it's been one anti-business measure after another, with this latest one with the gross receipts tax. It's very difficult for companies like ours.
So a company like yours, you could have a downturn like 2008, 2009, 2010, and not be selling anything and be sitting on inventory. And the picture that Kyle gave us in the first segment of the hour about, hey, well, look at there's a whole wall full of lumber we are going to have to sell. It was the same thing in the agricultural sector when people were growing grass seed and they had 2 or 3 years of supply in warehouse. They're just staring at bags and bags and bags of inventory, and you're losing your money, and that's money just sitting there that you can't reinvest and employ people with because it's product, right? So during those years, you're still going to be paying a tax on your sales even if you lose money.
That's exactly right, which seems kind of un-American in a way that you'd be paying tax when you're losing money on your operations. Man. And it's kind of like kicking somebody when they're down, honestly. We're a small family business. We're a large business, I would say, as far as total sales. We do somewhere around $120 million in sales a year. That doesn't mean, for people out there who assume that you're just making that much money, you obviously have a cost of sales, a cost of goods produced. So your margins are tight, especially in the commodity type products that we make. So having another, half percent that's added on as a tax is tough. I mean, that's $500,000 to us at least that we're paying in taxes.
Wow.
On top of what we already pay.
When you guys are a cloistered in a family environment, do you scratch your head and go, what are we doing in Oregon?
Yeah, we've talked about that a fair amount. And when I mentioned the facility we just put in, if we were to do another one, it'd be somewhere else for sure.
All right, I hope somebody's listening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Because they don't actually believe that what you're saying happens. And, it did. There was headlines this year with a timber company saying, Stimson.
Stimson, right, and saying, Andrew Miller, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're not going to invest in Oregon anymore. As a matter of fact, we're going to cut about our Oregon jobs and move out of state. And it's kind of those things that happen so often, and the legislators don't hear about it, and people don't talk to the press about it. So I applauded for them for doing that. People need to know that capital and investment flees the state if you make it unhospitable.
That's right. And, I'm a true believer in the fact that businesses are the golden goose that lays a golden egg here in our society. And we're providing jobs, and not only jobs for people, but we're also providing products that people need. If we weren't providing a product that somebody needed, we wouldn't be in business. And all the while, we're also generating wealth. So to actually discourage that in Oregon, I think is not good at all.
We won't take time of Kyle's time here. I'm going to talk a little bit more about product, but going into the politics. But Dave and I will handle that maybe tomorrow or the next day or every month in terms
pretty
of...
Pretty much every day.
If you want to pay for government services, education, healthcare, and so forth, you better have industry that provides the tax base to pay for it. That's...
Well, and I think they've looked at timber industry as being a captive audience that, there's no other option besides leaving the state. And that's just absolutely wrong. Roseburg Forest Products, for instance, just made over $100 million investment in a facility in the South. And the reason why is because it has a favorable environment for business and they have fiber availability, both of which are at risk here in Oregon.
Mm.
Well, I just wanted to sink that in for about 10 minutes. All right, let's talk a little bit more about your product before we run out of time, because we were talking during the break. It actually has seismic benefits because there's some give in it, right?
That's right. We're a pretty stiff product, but at the same time, you can build in, say, post-stressed connectors and things like that can perform very well in earthquakes. So they're actually looking at different structural designs now of buildings, and they've done some of these done in PV Hall down at Oregon State University, mm-hmm. where not only will these structures actually survive an earthquake, But they'll be repairable as well, so you don't have to tear the entire building down like you do with a lot of concrete structures.
Wow, amazing.
That's what about the savings
people,
there.
What about the people in our culture now that think wood products and you shouldn't be cutting down trees and it's horrible for the environment?
Well, I would say that this could be one of the biggest win-win opportunities that Oregon has had in a long, long time. Even though the mass you hear in mass timber is big. We're talking about big elements here. You aren't talking about big timber. The average diameter of the tree that we put into our mass timber products are about 8.5 to 9 inches. That's the average diameter. You probably have trees that size in your backyard.
Yeah, that's not exactly old growth.
No, it's really trees that you can find in a lot of thinning projects, a lot of these forest health and rehabilitation projects that reduce forest fuels. We can actually use those to make an engineered wood product.
Mm. So where do you find, the timber? Where do you find the product to go into your final finished product?
Well, we have some of our own timber ground.
Is it Oregon?
It's all in Oregon. We have about 17,000 acres of our own timber that we supply about 15% of what we use. And then depending on, obviously, the year, we're either 50% private logs or 50% public timber. But we're highly dependent on public timber, whether it's the Department of Forestry or the Forest Service or the BLM.
So it can be good for forest health. It can be great for environmental benefits. It can help us here on the West Coast with seismic dangers.
Well, a couple aspects of the product itself, when it goes into a building, just for comparison, concrete uses about 8 times as much energy to be produced as wood like ours. Steel is about 6 times, I believe, the energy. We actually sequester carbon in the product itself. So those who are concerned about global warming, we actually are sequestering carbon in the structures we build. And these aren't buildings that are going to be there for just a few years. They're going to be there for a long time, long term.
One more question. I don't even know if we have time for it, but you said you had patents in 5 different countries for what specifically you do. So what's different about Ferrous Lumber and the product that's coming out that gives you an advantage?
Well, there's a lot of aspects of the fact that we're veneer-based and the process itself that we construct these panels that really give us an edge over the traditional mass timber products like CLT. The efficiency of what we use, the superior structural numbers we have, they're all benefits in construction, and I think that will give us an edge in the markets going forward.
All right, what's the next biggest thing we're going to see in a news release coming out of Ferrous Lumber?
Oh, I'm not sure about that. Honestly.
Oh, you can't spill the beans?
No, I couldn't. Hopefully, it's the fact that our product is going to be in multiple structures here going forward in 2020.
Well, I hope you've got some things in the pipeline and people are excited about what they can build with your product. We've been talking to Kyle Ferris of Ferrous Lumber, $35 million investment here in the canyon. Employing people, paying property taxes, taking a risk on the economics and the political reality of Oregon, and that's a great thing.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys doing it. Wow, Ferrous Lumber, folks. So keep your ears open for what they're going to be making, the incredible mass timber products, mass plywood panel. In case you ever need one that's 48 feet long, you know where to turn. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Kyle, for being here. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morin, and we're going to do this again. So stick with us, and I appreciate you being newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.